Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Nadia Benjamin, co-founder of the groups Global Exchange and Code Pink Women for Peace, who discusses her ejection from the Democratic Convention in Boston and her views about strategic voting in the upcoming election. 94-year-old U.S. Senate candidate Doris Granny D. Haddock, who talks about why she launched her insurgent New Hampshire campaign, and Puerto Rican new song artist and political activist Roy Brown, who recently performed for 10,000 at a Caracas concert. He discusses what's at stake in Venezuela's upcoming presidential recall referendum. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
A July 23rd ruling by Indonesia's Constitutional Court has thrown out the Muslim nation's anti-terrorism law, enacted in response to the 2002 Bali bombing that killed over 200 people, mostly foreign tourists. As a result, 32 Islamic militants convicted of the Bali attack under the anti-terror law might face less severe charges or even be set free. In a matter of days, the High Court ruling forced Indonesian authorities to drop charges against Abu Bakar Bashir, the spiritual leader of Jamaah Islamiyah, who was accused of being the mastermind behind the Bali bombing. Police still consider Bashir the prime suspect behind the car bomb attack at the Marriott Hotel in Jakarta last year. According to The Economist magazine, Bashir's status remains in doubt. The cleric, who remains in jail, must either face new criminal charges or prosecutors must show that he orchestrated terrorist attacks from behind bars. Three of the militants convicted in the Bali bombing faced the death penalty. The government was hoping to sentence a fourth, Mohammed Ihsan, to life in prison for his role in the bombing. Now prosecutors will settle for a 10-year prison sentence. The website OneWorld.net reports that work on the 1,100-mile oil pipeline from the Caspian Sea to Turkey was suspended in late July by the Georgian government because British Petroleum, the lead company in the $3.6 billion project, did not apply for the required permits. Georgia, a former Soviet republic, reacted after photos taken by the World Wildlife Fund revealed that construction had begun in the environmentally sensitive Borjomi region, home to fragile alpine forests. Environmentalists hope that Georgia's new president, Mikhail Saakashvili, will reconsider the pipeline project. Already, Georgia's current environment minister has said that the proposed route through the Borjomi National Forest was a mistake. As World Wildlife Fund's James Leighton stated, British Petroleum was caught red-handed. They had made all sorts of promises about how the project would boost Georgian sovereignty, yet as soon as Georgian law no longer fit its schedule, they violate it without hesitation. Currently, the Baku-Ceyhan pipeline is 70% complete. Last November, the World Bank approved a critical loan for the pipeline in Azerbaijan, only a month after a disputed election where the opposition claims massive vote fraud took place. The flawed election led to protests and a police crackdown that left one protester dead and over 300 badly injured. As the youthful director of the Christian Coalition in the early 1990s, Ralph Reed condemned gambling as a cancer on the American body politic. According to The Nation magazine, Reed, now a political consultant and a major operative in the Bush-Cheney campaign, is working as a lobbyist for an Indian tribe to protect its casino interests. 2 years ago, Reed was pulled into the gambling shootout between the rival Coushatta tribe and the Jena Band in Louisiana. The Jena's casino competition could have cost the Coushatta gaming operation more than $1 billion over 5 years. To win approval for its casino, the Jena Band hired former Republican National Committee head Haley Barbour to lobby the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs. To counterattack, the Coushatta tribe put Reed on the payroll, albeit indirectly through two Republican consultants, Jack Abramoff and Mike Scanlon, who was formerly Tom DeLay's spokesman. The duo already had a $32 million contract with the tribe. Since leaving the Christian Coalition in 1997, Reed has had close ties with George W. Bush and Karl Rove, who helped arrange an early consulting contract with Enron for Reed. In 2000, Reed launched a massive assault on GOP insurgent John McCain in the South Carolina primary. Now McCain's Indian Affairs Subcommittee is investigating lobbying abuses, corruption and kickbacks in Indian gambling, a scandal that Reed could be implicated in. Public hearings are planned for early September. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Elaine Osowski.
Between the Lines.
The Democrats, who gathered in Boston for their presidential convention, were subjected to one of the most highly scripted and controlled events in the recent history of U.S. politics. Every speech given and every sign held by delegates was subject to approval by candidate John Kerry's staff. Outside the Fleet Center convention site, Boston police attempted to corral protesters into a cage-like area compared by many to an internment camp. But despite all their efforts to control the image of the Democratic Party, as seen by Americans in very limited broadcast television coverage, presidential candidate John Kerry received little or no post-convention bounce in his public standing, according to some early opinion polls. And while many of the thousands of Democratic delegates went home from Boston energized and optimistic about the chances for victory in November, others have lingering doubts about John Kerry's vague strategy for ending the U.S. occupation of Iraq. Medea Benjamin, the co-founding director of Global Exchange and an activist with the group Code Pink Women for Peace, was in Boston for the Democratic convention. As Teresa Hines Kerry spoke at the podium in support of women's rights and free speech on the second night of the convention, Benjamin, who ran as the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate from California in 2000, unfurled a banner which read, "End the occupation of Iraq." Immediately, she was set upon by security guards and forcibly removed from the convention center. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Medea Benjamin about her experience in Boston and her views about strategic voting in the upcoming presidential election.
First, I was in the hallway walking along with a banner that said, "End the occupation in Iraq," and was approached by a security guard who said that that's not allowed. You can only have pre-approved signs, and this was not pre-approved. And we started arguing with them, and then more security guards came, and there were a number of us in Code Pink that started arguing. And as we were there arguing, somebody from the press, who was really appalled by the Democrats' position on this, handed me their press pass and said, "Why don't you take it onto the floor?" And so while they were arguing, I just kind of snuck away and went right onto the floor. And that was at the time that Teresa Hines was speaking. And it was quite amazing because first I was just standing there with the sign and was immediately pounced upon by police, by Democratic security people themselves. And I'm hearing in the background Teresa Hines' speech, which is saying things like, "We must listen to the voices of women. True patriots are the ones who speak truth to power. My husband wouldn't send troops to fight a war on the basis of a lie." And I'm thinking, well, wait, you know, I got to speak truth to power here while they're trying to pull me out just for holding the sign. And that's when I started saying, "But Teresa, will John bring the troops home? Will he oppose the occupation of Iraq?" And at that time was already getting pulled out of the room. I was held for about 30 minutes. They brought in the Secret Service. They brought in the Boston Police. There were quite a large number of people who were interrogating me. And then they brought in somebody from the Democratic National Committee's leadership and asked them if they wanted to press charges. They went out and huddled for a while, came back in and said no. I also should say, Scott, that I was so appalled by their treatment of somebody who was literally just holding up a sign that we decided to go back the next day and the next day, not only to the convention itself, but to the caucus meetings, and got in tussles with the Democrat security people all along the way. They really wanted to vet not only signs, but bandanas that people were wearing that said Delegates for Peace that the Kucinich people were wearing. They wanted to vet the speeches that anybody was making, and anybody who actually managed to sneak through a slogan like "Bring the Troops Home," as Jesse Jackson did, it's because it was not pre-approved, and they went beyond the speeches that they had handed in.
What do you make of this convention where it was so highly scripted, so highly controlled, squashing dissent at every opportunity? What does that say about the Democrats, and what does it say about the image they're trying to project to the American people?
Well, there's an incredible disconnect, Scott, between the delegates of the party who are the real activists, the one that put their life and soul into the party, the membership of the Democratic Party, and the leadership of the party. And you really can't have a very exciting campaign when you have 95% of the delegates, according to surveys that were done by both the New York Times and the Boston Globe, saying that they thought the war in Iraq was a mistake, and the position of the leadership that says something totally different. People were very upset and wanted to, in some ways, overlook Kerry's position because they were so determined to support Kerry and get Bush out of office. But you really saw people struggling to align their positions around Iraq, which are very near and dear to many of the people in the Democratic base, with what Kerry said in his speech.
Mehdi, I wanted to ask you about an open letter that you and a few other activists have signed, titled An Open Letter to Progressives, Vote Kerry and Cobb, meaning David Cobb, the Green Party presidential candidate this year. The letter was signed by yourself, Daniel Ellsberg, Peter Coyote, the actor Tom Hayden. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what this letter says in terms of the strategic choices you think voters should make this year?
Well, a number of us came together and thought that it was important to put our thoughts on paper and to jointly sign a statement saying why we thought it was so important that we act in concert with the large number of people around this country that are so anxious to get rid of Bush, but that we not forget that Kerry did vote for this war, that the Democratic Party leadership has not provided us with alternatives, and that it's important to support the Green Party, especially after making a decision at its national convention that Ralph Nader would not be the standard bearer of the party during this election, and that the majority of delegates to the Green Party convention recognized that the most important thing we could do in this election was to focus on local races and get local Green candidates elected to office. And that was indeed the priority of David Cobb, the Green Party nominee. So we signed this joint letter calling on people to vote for David Cobb if they are in a safe state. But if people do live in swing states, then they should recognize the importance of getting Bush out of office and vote for Kerry.
That was Mehdia Benjamin, founding director of Global Exchange. Contact the group by calling 1-800-497-1994 or visit their website at www.globalexchange.org. Visit Code Pink's website at www.codepinkalert.org. Doris Haddock, known as Granny D, is a 94-year-old activist who gained fame 5 years ago when she walked across the U.S. to promote campaign finance reform. Both John McCain and Russell Feingold, the Senate sponsors of the campaign reform law, have credited Haddock with helping ensure its passage. Though there are many loopholes through which unregulated contributions still flow to candidates, the McCain-Feingold law is viewed by many as a symbolic start in getting big money out of politics. Haddock began another campaign last year, traveling around the country encouraging working women to register to vote, in line with her conviction that if more working women vote, more progressives will be elected to office at all levels. She interrupted that campaign in June to announce a run for a U.S. Senate seat from New Hampshire against well-funded incumbent Republican Senator Judd Gregg after his Democratic challenger suddenly dropped out of the race. She says she is running to win and has attracted several highly experienced campaign volunteers, one of whom is Joe Trippi, the mastermind behind Howard Dean's insurgent internet-driven campaign. Haddock was one of the keynote speakers at the Boston Social Forum, which took place the weekend before the Democratic National Convention. The following are excerpts from her talk recorded by Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus on July 24th.
We are the conservatives. We want to conserve nature, the atmosphere, our carbon resources, our cultural diversity around the world, and our ideas of freedom, justice, and happiness. We want America to be safe. We do not want our children to have to suspiciously eye every person who enters a bus or a restaurant. We understand that this security can only come with international justice. Who are we to be out there fighting to be winning elections? We are the people who believe in a world of environmental beauty, of happiness and not exploitation, of justice and not oppression and torture. A world safe for children because we invest in our smart babies, not smart bombs. We believe in international law and cooperative action. We are the opposite numbers to the Bush neoconservatives. If we lose, the world loses its environment, loses its justice, loses its happiness. So we are clear that we must win. There are many among us who will not support a candidate unless that candidate is perfect on every issue. Politics is about winning. For us, it is about winning to save lives and raise people up from poverty and illness and loneliness and injustice. Those posturing on the left sometimes forget that. Do not tell me that you cannot support a particular candidate because of this or that. This isn't about you and your precious political standards. This is about saving nature and our people. We are coming out to win. Please do not stand in our way. When we have reasonable people in power, let us start our arguments again. But we cannot move forward unless we have a decent government underneath us and a Bill of Rights to let us speak freely. This is great work. Did you, as a child, hope that one day it would be in your hands to save the world? Then rejoice. Is it not indeed joyful to find yourself embarking on a life of great meaning? Yes, that is the great Peace March smile we saw on the streets of New York and Washington and San Francisco and 1,000 other cities and towns. Is it not? Are we not joyful for this moment? When all is at stake, do not stand in the way of our joy. For what is life if not a theater of the soul, where we might take our part for good or ill? What better thing do we have to do in these months ahead than save the world? We will. We will. Yes, we will. For everything, there is a season. This is the electoral season. Get busy.
That was 94-year-old U.S. Senate candidate Doris Granny D. Haddock. For more information on her New Hampshire Senate campaign, call area code 603-563-8036 or visit her website at www.grannyd.com. After a failed coup attempt, strikes and sporadic violence targeting Venezuela's populist President Hugo Chavez, well-funded opposition groups allied with the Bush administration will be put to the test in their drive to oust the twice-elected former military man in the upcoming August 15th recall referendum. After much controversy and internationally brokered negotiations, a coalition of business leaders, opposition parties, and labor union officials finally collected the 2.4 million signatures required to hold a national referendum on Hugo Chavez's rule. But according to polls, the momentum which once seemed on the side of those wanting to depose Chavez has now switched to the president's supporters. Over the past year, Chavez's government has bolstered its support in Venezuela's impoverished neighborhoods by using the nation's vast oil wealth to increase funding for education, housing, and health care, benefiting the nation's poor majority. In advance of the August referendum, both sides have held large rallies and other events to energize the faithful. One such event was an August 1st concert in Caracas, organized by the government's Ministry of Communication, that presented Venezuelan, Cuban, and Puerto Rican musicians. The concert, dubbed Voices for Unity, attracted more than 10,000 Chavez supporters and featured performances by famed Cuban artist Silvio Rodriguez, Ibrahim Ferrer of the Buena Vista Social Club, and Puerto Rican Nueva Trova singer, songwriter, and activist Roy Brown. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Brown about the concert and what he feels is at stake for Venezuela and Latin America in the upcoming recall election.
Ibrahim Ferrer with Buena Vista Social Club was there, a very famous group. They won the Grammy some years ago. A very, very important singer, salsa singer, Andy Montañez. A Venezuelan singer, Lilia Vera, and Orquesta Aragon, the legendary orchestra from Cuba, was there, and Silvio Rodriguez. It was a cultural activity mostly, but the people who assisted to the event were people who were going to say no to the recall. Silvio Rodriguez is a good friend of Hugo Chavez, as is Lilia Vera, who's a very famous singer there in Venezuela. The opposition, those who do favor the recall, were having their activity also the same day. So there was a lot of music that night.
What's your sense from being in Caracas? What's your sense of the referendum? There are many polls out saying that Hugo Chavez will not be recalled, that the effort to throw him out of office will fail. But, of course, the final determination will be made on August 15th with the referendum results. But what's your sense of what people are feeling there?
Just by seeing from the event, it's the biggest event I've ever been to. And in terms of the sense I got, there's a lot of tension in the air, is what I perceived. I wasn't there for a long time because I arrived at 6 and I was up till about 1 and talking to people, and then by 10 o'clock I was on my way out. But the sense is that he will win by about a 10 to 15% margin, at least.
What's at stake in this referendum? I mean, knowing, I know you were just in and out of Caracas pretty quickly, but of course you studied what's going on there, and you know the dynamics, of course, with the United States and the role they've played in trying to overthrow Hugo Chavez's regime one way or the other. They're determined to get him out of there. What do you think's at stake?
Well, everything is at stake, really, because this is the word that came to me when I was seeing Silvio and seeing him and really witnessing it, and this is hope, because the message is the message of social justice, that government has a role not just to develop and watch over the interests of the capital, but the government is an entity to seek happiness for the majority of people and provide a system that provides education and health, so the majority of the people can also be happy. And I think that's his message, because there's very few people in Venezuela who own everything, and it's all by privilege, not necessarily by work. And the majority of people who work there don't make enough to make a living, and I think his programs are to develop the communities. And that's why he's run into trouble with rich people who own everything and with the United States, because the United States, I think they're confused about this. They're backing the wrong people again. That's my opinion.
Roy Brown, just a final question. The United States, during this Iraq war, has certainly attracted the ire of many people around the world, and that's been going on for some time in Latin America, where there's a virtual rebellion against the neoliberal economic policies that Washington has pushed through the IMF and the World Bank. What's going on in terms of Latin America and the way you think people there are viewing the U.S.?
Well, I think that they're viewing the U.S. as somebody who's really misguided, and there's a definite desire and need to use the resources to bring people out of poverty. And it seems that the United States are opposed to every measure that any government, elected government, are trying to implement in order to better lives of the majority of the people. And it's the old story. It's happening again, you know, and people in Argentina and Brazil and in Ecuador and in Venezuela, and I think it's going to happen in Mexico also, are going to become very impatient with the situation. And it would be a very big mistake, because these changes could occur in a very peaceful way. Simply elected governments using the resources that they have in order to bring people out of poverty. And it's being boycotted by different embassies and American embassies who are misguided.
That was Nueva Trova singer, songwriter, and political activist Roy Brown discussing a recent concert in support of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. For more information on the August 15th recall referendum, visit the English language website VenezuelaAnalysis.com. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced at the studios of WPKN Radio and distributed by Squeaky Wheel Productions. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, or would like a copy of today's program, please contact Between the Lines by calling area code 203-331-9756. Or write to Between the Lines, care of WPKN Radio, 244 University Avenue, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 06604. Our theme music was written and performed by Mika Toff. This week's program is produced by Scott Harris with the assistance of Bill Cosentino, Hank Hoffman, Anna Manzo, Harry Minot, Bob Nixon, Elaine Osowski, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Denise Manzari.